612, if you would be en route to Albany, reference a holdup which just occurred at Freeway Liquor. Three white males, they did have a handgun in their possession.
Hi everyone, Sheriff Scott Rose here with the Officer Down Memorial Podcast.
I got a third party call from the mother. Apparently the daughter's there, and he said this male party AJ is there now and he has a gun, according to the caller.
Copy, is he threatening her with it?
Per the mother, who's in Rochester, she says that he is. And he was telling the daughter that he has a weapon with him, and that's all she could tell me.
Copy. Can you try making phone contact there and see if we can get somebody to step out?
Have you ever thought about what it would be like to be a law enforcement officer?
After I saw Dustin get shot, I got on the radio right away and called out, and I said 1088 shot fired officer down. Obviously, I didn't say it that calmly as I just said it now. It was much more intense at the time.
Information requires Officer Down in Andover. 2118 140th Lane, Officer Down, ambulance en route.
To step in their shoes for a day.
911. Hi. A man just came in my house with a gun. He took my dad.
You're 1129 Bromo Avenue.
1121.
1121 Bromo Avenue.
He took my dad's car.
He took your dad's car?
He took our phone, and now I'm at the neighbor's house.
Correct. Describe the vehicle, ma'am.
It's a Champagne Thunderbird.
Champagne Thunderbird.
Wait, 817.
And to realize how quickly a call can go bad.
Officer in trouble, 3636 South Rock Road, operate sheriff. Dispatch 4 checking.
4, we were en route with our emergency equipment activated. We get to Pawnee and Woodlawn, and dispatch asks again for checking, and Brian comes up on the radio, and he says, 4 have been shot, hurry.
4 have been shot, hurry.
In each episode of the Officer Down Memorial Podcast, we'll take you back in time. We'll take you back to the era. We'll introduce you to the community, to the agency. And then you'll get to know the officers, and you'll get to know the families.
You know, he's a fairly big guy compared to my brother. I mean, my brother and I are 5'7". My brother was 5'8". My dad was just, he always said he was 5'11 and 3/4". He wouldn't call himself 6 foot. So, and, you know, old farm boy, and he was Irish to the core, and he was a prankster. Those people I'd run into at the VA that knew him when he was young were telling me stories, and I was like, my dad had a dual life. He was the family man to us, and he was just behind the scenes. He was always a jokester.
So Sean was just that hometown kid that everybody liked when he was growing up, and everybody liked him as an officer. He was the type that could do his job, could write those tickets, could put people in jail, but he wasn't the guy that was going to put you in your place. He was going to have a good understanding with that person that he dealt with, and they were going to have the respect for him afterwards. And he was that officer that everybody would want on your staff, that you're going to get very little complaints from, because he was doing the job for the right reason, which was just to help people, and he just had the caring nature about it.
One time I went to a kegger that got busted, but I managed to sneak away without getting caught. The next day I get a call from my dad and says, come on down to the office. And so I go down there, and he says, where were you last night? And I said, oh, you know, I was doing this, just doing that. And he said, well, I busted a lot of your buddies out at this party. Were you out there? And I said, well, I guess. So he you know, he arrests me and gives me a ticket. I go out, my mom books me, and then I had to call my brother up to come and pay my fine. So he was very concerned that people saw him as a fair man, so he didn't give his kids any breaks. And I appreciated that. You know, he didn't want to embarrass the man because, you know, his job was very important, and he did it very well.
Brian was one of those that, you know, everyone got along with him, the community, people that he had to deal with. He was a hard charger. He's one of those that just a good guy all around.
He was only a dad for 2 months, but he was a really great dad in 2 months.
It was really incredible to watch that Klinefelter family come together and just support each other. You know, because some of the things that, you know, people don't realize is like Jason Klinefelter, which was Brian's brother, was one of our police reserve. And Greg Klinefelter, his other brother, actually owned his own business. But after Brian's death, he goes into law enforcement and becomes an officer with our department at St. Cloud, all because of Brian. So it was just one of the nicest families you'll ever meet.
I knew, you know, of course, that it's a dangerous field, but I was more so just excited for him because I could tell that he was really passionate about it. I could tell that it was something that he really felt like he would enjoy doing and he would thrive in. So I really encouraged him to continue down that path.
My mom and dad, you know, on the occasion, rare occasion that they would go out together, one of us kids then was assigned to answer the phone. And if we got a call, so then we get on a radio to dispatch a deputy or whoever. Well, you know, it was crazy. I'm 12 probably years old, and I'm on a two-way radio dispatching deputies to an accident out by Flensburg or something. You know. And the cars were numbered, you know, so I think 1 through 4 was the sheriff's department, and then 5 started the police department. And so you just went to, you know, sheriff's residence to car 3. And you'd get one of the deputies or whatever. My dad was car 1. And I imagine Andy would have been car 2. My mom was the cook for all the inmates then. My job was when it came time to feed them, every evening at whatever time was supper, I had to be home because my mom would cook the food and I'd set it up on the tray and I'd pass it through this. There's a pantry right off of the kitchen. And there was a big barred window there with a little slot where you could slide it. And these guys would line up. You slide them their tray of food. And we set up. So I had to help my mom feed these guys, you know, basically. Oh, I mean, when they talk about a family affair, it was the Stack family.
We'll then walk you through exactly what happened when we lost these heroes.
It is one of the darkest days in Itasca County's history. The body of Deputy Robert Lawson is wheeled out on a stretcher, the victim of a single gunshot to the head. Lawson was killed execution style at this home in Pengilly. The veteran deputy came to the home to pick up a child, but it was a setup. As he walked in a back door, Audie Fox, a career criminal who'd had run-ins with Lawson before, was waiting for him.
Many of these stories are told in part by the officers who were there and the survivor families who were left behind.
They come in the house and then they told Billy, go get your mom and dad. And Billy come and said, Mom, you gotta come. There's somebody to see you, you know. And I was faster at getting my clothes or whatever on than John was. But I came out here in the kitchen and Phil was standing. You know, and it's ironic. My little daughter, who was 8 years old, she died in my arms on this same place in the kitchen where Phil stood and told me Tommy was killed. Well, I don't know, you just kind of, Phil right away said Tommy's been shot. And I remember going through my mind was, he'll be okay, though. You took him to the hospital, and he'll be okay, won't he? And Phil just looked at me, and he said no. And I think that's when, you know, you just lose your heart. You lose your everything. How can you explain that? It's just like a huge washcloth wipes out part of your life, you know? I had just talked to Tommy just a few hours before. I had just talked to him on the phone, and I'll be over in the morning, Mom. You know? Just,
Our older stories are researched and written based on old newspaper documents and historical records and agency records, going back nearly 150 years. It was December 2nd, 1874. The beginning of the fourth coldest December Minnesotans had ever experienced.
The country was in the last few years of what we call the Reconstruction Era, following the Civil War, and President Grant was fighting for the protection.
Each of these stories reminds us of the incredible risks these men and women serving our communities take every day when they put on that badge and walk out their front door to go to work.
Certainly, we know in law enforcement about how dangerous this job can be, and that there's a danger behind every door. You know, for the community, our county commissioners, our city council people, I think it opened up their eyes to that it really is dangerous, and it could happen in the morning when we least expect it, during the daylight, in which this was the case.
These stories also show us what these families go through when their heroes don't come home.
Being in a small town and in a Catholic school, first through eighth grade, so back in the late 60s and into the 70s, I honestly think I was the only child in that school, first through eighth grade, that didn't have a daddy. So that was really hard on me. And I remember as a real small child, so I was 4 and a half when it happened, and I think I was in like first, maybe second grade. I could not wait until I was old enough to get a driver's license, because it was my absolute fantasy and dream to get in a car and drive to Stillwater and go inside. And of course, you know, I'm picturing it like a bigger version of Morrison County Jail, where I could go right up to his cell and look at him and say, and ask him, why did you take my daddy away from me? I wanted to do that so bad. And he ended up dying from cancer within a few years of the incident. So I remember being, as a very young child, upset that I was never going to get that opportunity to do that. You know, I wanted to face him face to face, bars in between us. Why did you take my daddy away from me?
Nationwide, we've lost over 26,000 since we started tracking fallen officer deaths in the U.S., with over 1,700 fallen officers in just the last 5 years. Each of these stories gives you a glimpse of what these officers, these local heroes, and their families go through when we have an officer down. These stories remind us of the importance of this noble calling, the fact that we need good men and women to serve and protect in our communities. Men and women serving as the thin blue line between good and evil. These are ordinary men and women. They are the folks you see at the grocery store, at the restaurant, or they're the ones you sit next to at your kid's baseball game. Ordinary men and women willing to take extraordinary risks to often protect people they don't even know. Men and women who truly believe in service before self. New episodes of the Officer Down Memorial Podcast are released monthly, sometimes more frequently depending on the story, and they can be listened to anywhere you get your podcasts or on our website at www.officerdownmemorialpodcast.com. On the website, you'll also see photos of the families. We'll share evidence photos when available too to help you better visualize these stories, these heroes, and their amazing families. On behalf of the families and the Officer Down Memorial Podcast, I just want to thank you for letting me take a few minutes of your day to share this project with you and encourage you to check out the podcast. By learning, listening, and sharing these stories, together we can help support these survivor families and ensure that the stories of their fallen heroes, their service, and their sacrifice will never be forgotten.